is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg. Wait a minute. There's somebody sitting here with a bright blue, blue shirt there. Union now. Now, wait a minute. Columbia and Yale academics are forced to strike as university administrators refuse union recognition and CUNY faculty without a contract for 2 years. My gosh, what in the world is going on in academia? Joining us now to tell us are Dalia Hanna, who is a Columbia University teaching assistant, member of the Graduate Student Employees United, Local 2110 of the UAW, on strike, and Barbara Bowen, president of the Professional Staff Congress, AFT, and Mary Reynolds with the Graduate Student Teaching and Research Assistance and chair of Yale Local 35 Unite here. Sisters, what in the world is going on? Why are our institutions of higher learning so antagonistic to the rights of their workers? Don't all speak at one time. Dalia, and then we'll pick up with our other two guests.
Certainly. Thank you for having me on. It's really incomprehensible that an institution like Columbia or Yale or the CUNY system would be prohibiting their own workers from exercising such a basic human right as the right to organize and the right to bargain for fair working conditions and fair wages.
In light of the work that we do, as a friend of mine has recently written an editorial, it looks like a job, it smells like a job, and you work it like it's a job. So the equivocation about our status as workers is really purely for the purpose of depriving us of the right to unionize. There's certainly nothing that prevents one from being both a student in our capacity as students and an employee of this university. There's no connection there, and I think that that's well recognized by everyone in academia. So this equivocation on the part of the Columbia administration and hiding behind this labor board decision is purely a union busting tactic and really is not in any way an honest reflection of our role in the universities. The thing that motivates me in this struggle for unionization the most, I mean, on top of the fact that I would like to have better wages and better benefits and, you know, basic things like job descriptions, is that I'm very aware of the way in which these low wages and unequal conditions lead to a perpetuation of these universities and higher education as an upper-class phenomenon. Unless you have outside financial support or are willing to incur huge amounts of debt and financial uncertainty, graduate school is just not an option. And that restricts, first of all, deters many people from even entering higher education, going to graduate school, going on to be a professor or do other kinds of graduate work. And that perpetuates a culture in the universities, especially in a university like Columbia, where it appears to be and is, in fact, only accessible to upper-class students. And that also restricts it to the greatest extent, white students, to students from affluent areas, and that affects the culture of the academy. It affects the kind of work that is done here, what counts as an appropriate subject of research, and it results in a perpetuation of the status quo at the university. Let's not forget that both of our last presidential candidates attended Yale University. I mean, these universities, especially in the Ivy League, are where people come to be trained to be, you know, the leaders of the next generation and in business and that sort of thing. So the perpetuation of the status quo along race, class, and gender lines has a very important effect in the values that it communicates to undergraduates and graduate students alike. And that's what really brings me into the struggle.
What are you talking about? Lee Bollinger, the president of Columbia, is speaking all over town. Saw him at the Bar Association last week, lifting up the issue of civil liberties, of free speech, with some nascent criticism, which should not be given against the Middle East studies professors at Columbia. But what? Reject a union?
It's totally preposterous and out of line with, in fact, his own statements that he has worked with a union in the past, and he has openly said that he knows that a graduate student union can be a good thing for graduate students. He doesn't think it's a problem. So that's our question, is why is Columbia resisting recognizing our union? Because certainly there are no justifications on the kind of academic and intellectual grounds that we teach there.
and our sister from Yale. What in the world? You folks are also out on strike. Must be something broader in the environment of universities.
Hello. Again, thank you very much for having me on. I think that's absolutely right. There is something going wrong in the environment of higher education. There's a real crisis. There's essentially a corporate takeover of higher education aided by the Bush administration's anti-worker agenda. And so you can see at places like Yale and Columbia, but across the country, a real shift over the last 15 or 20 years from stable, well-paid, permanent jobs to casual, low-paid, fewer benefits. Lack of job security, you know, the casualization of the academy is what is happening, and I think that's why graduate teachers at Yale and at Columbia are working together to fight back not just the Bush administration, but then also our own administrations and the ways in which they themselves are actually coming to rely more on graduate teacher labor, where there are graduate teachers at Yale who teach and don't receive health care, or there are graduate teachers at Yale who can't afford health care for their families, or, you know, I myself have been teaching now for 2 years at Yale, and next year I'll take a $3,000 pay cut, and I only make $17,000 now, and so it's going to be very difficult for me to be able to pay my rent, you know, perform my studies and my teaching duties.
And let's bring Barbara Bowen, president of the Professional Staff Congress, into the discourse as well. 2 years without a contract. Ha, who needs better wages or health care?
We do. And it's actually been more than 2 years. It's 2.5 and almost 4 years without a raise, which is really criminal. Our salaries have eroded over many years, really since the 70s. Our salaries, some of them have lost up to 40% of their value in real dollars. And we haven't had a raise in years. And we are pressing right now very hard for a fair contract. We've had offers from the CUNY administration, but they fall far below what we need. And they don't address some of the intolerable conditions that we face. And we're just saying that this isn't good enough. We need more.
That our pressure has moved them. On March 17th, they came to the table with a much improved offer. Well, improved, I mean, above 1.5%, but it was only at 6.25% over 4 years. So as you can see quickly, that's far below even the cost of living increases. And also their offer had no lasting solution to a major issue for us, as it is for many other unions, and that's our health care benefits. So while we are pleased that our pressure moved them, we also can't accept that offer. It's just not a reasonable offer.
And I think we're seeing the same thing, even though we're a public university, that my colleagues mentioned at Yale and Columbia, which is a deep corporatizing of the university, at least an attempt to do that, to base the university on much more control by the managers and a huge army of underpaid workers.
Right.
We do have the right to organize, and we are a union, a longstanding union, but we face very anti-labor union, anti-labor laws in this state, which make it illegal to exercise the workers' right to withhold labor. So we face a very difficult bargaining climate, and we've been bargaining for more than 2 years. It's time for CUNY to come forward with a decent settlement for us.
Dahlia?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing at all of these universities is an increasing reliance on a labor force that is flexible, just like a labor force at Walmart or any other big company. And that means not only paying us a below living wage salary in New York City or a not adequate salary, but also keeping us in a condition of not knowing when our raises will come, not knowing if we will have job security in the event that we engage in controversial speech, not knowing when our next job appointments will come in many cases. This acts as a disrespect to academic workers and also as a real limit on academic freedom. And I think that there are very broad political implications of this, as well as bottom line implications, which are obviously driving these policies as well.
And how do you respond to the National Labor Relations Board that says, you're not workers, you're students. You're students, you're not workers. You can't force universities to recognize a union if you're not a worker.
This is Mary. I think the decision, you know, that came out down in July of 2004 happened just a week before the CGEU, which is the Coalition of Graduate Employee Unions, met for their annual conference. And we met at Columbia, and Yale co-sponsored that with Columbia. And I think the 200 or so graduate teachers who attended that meeting had two decisions. We could either give up, much like the faculty did after the Yeshiva decision, when faculty were stripped of their right to organize, in part kind of led us down the path where we are in the midst of this corporatization of the university, as Barbara was saying, or we could actually start to fight together. And I think we're now seeing, we've got Yale and Columbia out on strike together. We've got, I think we're in the midst of actually building a national movement to protect, you know, workers' rights, academics' rights, you know, both academic freedom and the right to organize. And, you know, I think, as Delia was saying, there are serious political implications, and you can see that in the kinds of levels of support that the Yale strikers and Columbia strikers are actually receiving. And so there are, you know, 43 members of Congress have now written to President Levin and President Bollinger and President Sexton of NYU, you know, demanding that these administrations, you know, actually not side themselves with President Bush and actually do recognize that, you know, the basic human right, the right, you know, the right to organize, as have now 8 members of the Senate. You know, John Edwards and Hillary Clinton and Ted Kennedy and Dick Durbin and Chuck Schumer have also all written to Bollinger and Levin and Sexton. On the ground, both at Yale and Columbia, we organized all through the fall and declared public majorities on these campuses and had those recognized by the Attorney General, you know, Elliot Spitzer in New York, and the Attorney General Richard Blumenthal in Connecticut, the Secretary of State in Connecticut, and we have a tremendous amount, I think, of political support. And it's not really.
If I can just jump in for a second, I think the one thing that's absolutely clear is that the reason we've gotten so much political support for this is that it is patently obvious that what we do is work. And if the Bush administration is the last one to realize that and their labor board is the last one to realize that, that's a sad state of affairs. But we're out this week because we know what we do is work. Our colleagues know what we do is work. The professors that give TAs work to do for the undergraduates know that it's work. The undergraduates at our universities know that it's work. And in the political and labor community, everyone realizes this as a basic fact of the matter.
Barbara, what about the part-time faculty? What about those who haven't received tenure? What's their status?
Well, as you know, both those categories are growing, and nationwide, there's a very, very small growth in tenured faculty, the most secure jobs, and a astronomical growth in part-time faculty and contingent faculty who don't have protections. I would say that the issue of our part-timers is a critical one for this contract for us. We have 9,500 part-timers, 9,500 part-timers teaching at CUNY, and over half of CUNY courses are taught by part-timers. And that's in spite of the fact that CUNY has made successful moves to hire new full-time faculty. There have been 600 full-time faculty hired in the last couple of years, but the increase in our student enrollment is so large that to keep up with that, given the underfunding, the chronic underfunding of a public higher education in the state, CUNY has continued to rely on the underpaid work of part-timers. And we're saying that a decent employer just cannot continue to do that. So we are seeking a solution in this contract to really a scandal in the higher education workplace, in the CUNY workplace. I'm not saying that CUNY wished to be underfunded. They didn't. But their solution to it has resulted in a real labor scandal. And we feel the need to make significant progress on that in this contract. So actually what we've proposed is something creative that would assist our students, would help the students. We've offered that part-timers would include in their expectation for their work that they meet with students, that they hold an office hour with students. This would benefit students, give them more access to their professors, and it would benefit the whole university. And also recognizes the professionalism of part-timers, most of whom do much work that is unpaid. And in exchange for that, the extra work that they're doing would create extra money to be applied to their salaries. So we're seeking a solution that recognizes their work, that does not carve into the rest of the bargaining package, and that would, above all, that would really help our students.
And what about the health care package? Let's examine that as well.
Oh, let's. You know, the biggest issue for unions across the country in the last 10 years at least, right, has been health care. And, in fact, most of the strikes that have occurred in this country in the last decade have not been about wages, but they've been about health care. And we are no different from other unions in facing a crisis in our supplemental health benefits. The big thing that we're focusing on is prescription drug benefits, because the cost for those benefits has risen astronomically. In the last 10 years, the cost of prescription drugs to our welfare fund has gone up 300%, and the contributions to the fund have increased only 28%. So there you see the gap that we're trying to fill. And we really have a crisis in our welfare fund. It has not been sufficiently funded given the skyrocketing price of prescription drugs. And we're seeking a solution in this contract in the form of ongoing increases in the annual contributions that CUNY makes to the fund, as well as retroactive money which would go toward the reserve of the fund. And, you know, I would stress that benefits, good competitive benefits, decent benefits, are something that CUNY critically needs to recruit and retain the best quality faculty and staff. It's not just that everybody should have a right to health care, right? We know that. But also, just more narrowly, if CUNY is in a renaissance, as it constantly proclaims itself to be, then it needs to be able to recruit and continue to attract and retain people who need to have good compensation. And a central part of that, as we all know now, one of the first things people ask when they look at a job is, what are my benefits? What support do I have for prescription drugs? So CUNY must do this if they want to continue to have the best quality faculty and staff.
And Barbara, I know that there are a number of activities. A professional staff congress did something yesterday, and this is really quite historic. The Yale and the Columbia students getting together and with the NYU student workers. Tell us about what the opportunity is here in terms of lifting up the issue of questions of affordable health care and child care and really the establishment of an impartial grievance procedure and all that should go with the establishment of a union and, of course, with the inclusion of our sisters and brothers from CUNY who need that contract, need a fair contract now.
It's a whole week of concentrated activity, which has, as you say, a historic alliance, I think, between the public and private sectors, and really understanding higher education as an employer, as an industry, and thinking about us as workers. It's a very big employer, one of the very biggest in New York City, and it receives quite a lot of public funding, and higher education is showing itself increasingly to be an irresponsible employer at every level, not just full-time faculty, but right down through the entire ranks. And we certainly see that at CUNY with our 9,500 part-timers who are vastly underpaid and on whose labor CUNY has sustained itself through years and years of underfunding. And so this week, there's a concentrated focus. On Monday, there was a hearing at City Council on academic labor issues in which many of us participated. There was a big and noisy and militant demonstration protest by the Professional Staff Congress and many other unions that joined us, including representatives from the two sister unions right there. That was at the offices of the chair of our Board of Trustees, Benno Schmidt, who also had a history at Yale, by the way. He was an anti-union president at Yale. He refused always even meet with the Graduate Student Employees Union. There's a demonstration at Columbia, which I'm sure others can tell you about, and then on Thursday there's a demonstration at NYU. So the whole week gives all of us, but also supporters across the city, for us, our students, we've had many, many students who came out yesterday with signs supporting us. It gives all of us a chance to articulate our outrage about this situation and its implications, not just for the pockets and the pocketbooks of people who work there, but also for the quality of education that we can offer, for the range of knowledge that we can produce. This is a real attack on what we can do as scholars and intellectuals and teachers, and it's also, I feel very deeply in our case at CUNY, it's an attack on our students and who they are. So it's a chance for the whole community to come out and support this issue.
Huge strike rally at Columbia University. That's at 116th and Broadway. I think this is a key rally to unify all of the issues facing academic laborers in New York and the area today.
Mary from Yale, the striking teachers at Yale and Columbia, it's really a joint endeavor. So give us more of your own perspective and specifically the issues that are going to be raised for the community, for other workers to support in this very historic strike rally that is taking place.
You're right. This is a historic, as far as I know, there has never actually been a multi-campus strike of faculty or any other worker in higher education in the Ivy League, nor has there been this kind of labor march for organizing rights in higher education, you know, which brings together, I know that our parent union, Unite Here, is turning out lots and lots of workers from food service to maintenance, who are actually out there to support organizing rights for all academic workers. I think in terms of the specific issues for us here at Yale, which are, you know, I'm sure quite similar to those at Columbia, are around, you know, a living wage, equal pay for equal work. The shift in part-time or casual labor, you know, that Barbara was talking about earlier, is happening for us too in terms of professional school students. So Yale is using more and more professional school students, you know, from the law school or the divinity school or the School of Music. They do about 1/5 of the teaching now in terms of graduate student teaching. And they don't, you know, they pay tuition, they don't receive health care benefits, they receive a lower wage than the PhD students whom they're teaching right alongside and doing the exact same amount of work. There's also a serious issue for graduate teachers who have families. The healthcare is completely cost prohibitive, and so you have, particularly for international students, you have, you know, a family trying to raise a child, you know, on a $17,000 stipend when healthcare costs $6,000. And so there are many students who are actually forced to turn to state aid in Connecticut. And so now we have Connecticut taxpayers actually subsidizing Yale and Yale's graduate teachers in order to provide health care for their children. And then you mentioned a grievance procedure earlier. I know for us at GSO, we have really organized around, you know, Yale becoming a more open and more accessible university, particularly around issues of diversity, women and people of color really being able to succeed in graduate school. You know, Yale still, after 20 years, has only one black woman with tenure. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
It's an atrocious, atrocious record. You know, a friend of mine, Shauna, who's in the AFAM department, you know, marched around, you know, campus today with her sign that read, you know, "Why are there more black women on strike than there are tenured at Yale today?" Which I think it, you know, speaks volumes. And so again, you know, a real grievance procedure where we could, you know, actually have an impartial party in, you know, in issues of discrimination, rather than actually having to go to our faculty, essentially, or our dean, you know, essentially our employer, I think would make a huge difference. And really calling on the university to actually do a lot more to retain women and people of color and allow them to succeed in graduate school.
Dalia Hanna?
Yes, that's the key issue that motivates me as well. Because without the protections of a contract, as well as fair pay and decent benefits, the persistent inequalities in the way we're treated, persistent discrimination, even where there's been an effort to overcome those obstacles to women and people of color in the academy, those burdens accumulate and fall much more heavily on students of color, on women, on students that don't have outside means of financial support. So a union contract that would raise us all up to an equal level, allow everyone to be financially stable and be equally protected in hiring, through grievance procedure in the event of discriminatory treatment, would do an enormous amount for equalizing opportunity to attend graduate school, to succeed in graduate school, and to become part of the faculty of these universities, which desperately needs to happen in order to broaden the kind of education, the kind of values, and the kind of academic work that we want to offer to undergraduates and to the greater community. I'd like to add one other note of support, which is that the University of Massachusetts Graduate Student Employees Union is on a one-day walkout today in solidarity with us as well, because they recognize that academic labor is a national issue, and although they are unionized, in fact through the UAW as well, they recognize that what's going on in private universities with graduate student employees has a direct impact and sets the standards for the way graduate student employees are treated in the public system across the country. So thank you to the UMass graduate student employees for their solidarity as well.
Indeed. And Barbara Bowen, why is it so important for folks to support what's happening with the graduate teaching assistants, and why is it so important that there be a good contract for the CUNY workers and unionization for all workers?
I think what's at stake is the kind of teaching we can do, the nature of the university itself. And CUNY is a public university. It's the people's university in New York City, and it's intolerable. It's just unacceptable that our management would accept the idea that austerity, I'm still hoarse from our rally yesterday, so sorry, would accept the idea that austerity is good enough for us. What they're saying to us is, we've accepted scarcity for you. We've accepted a culture of scarcity. That's good enough for you. And by implication, that's good enough for the working class students, the people of color, the poor people whom you teach. And what we're saying is that that's not good enough. There is plenty of money in this city. There's a $2.5 billion surplus in the city right now. There's plenty of money to fund public higher education adequately. And not funding that is really expressing an agenda of hostility to access to public higher education for working people in this city.
And
so it's a crucial issue, as it is for the Ivy League schools, too, where the implications of denying basic labor rights, this is basic labor rights, and they are human rights, to deny them to people who are working and teaching is an outrage. So we all have to support that.
And the reason I said good is because it shows how active, how assertive, and how exuberant were the gathering of workers, and always is, when people come together to support the just rights for the workers.
Can I make a brief point instead, which is that one of the things that we always hear is, oh, you have a great job, you love your job. Is that a reason to deny us fair pay? Is that a reason to deny us equal protection and fair treatment? The fact that we love our jobs and we're invested in them and do them well is not a reason to deny us labor rights. And
well,
that was what came out of our academic freedom rally as well yesterday.
Go down to the strike line.
I'll give you a chance, Mimi. How about students, faculty, staff unite? Same struggle, same fight.
Okay. And I'd like to thank you all. And I want to thank Dalia Hanna, the Columbia University teaching assistant and member of the Graduate Student Employees United Local 2110 UAW, and Barbara Bowen, President, Professional Staff Congress, AFT, and Mary Reynolds, with the Graduate Student Teaching and Research Assistants and Chair of Yale Local 35, Unite Here. I'd like to thank you for listening. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report. And if you'd like to get in touch with Building Bridges, you can write Mimi, that's M-I-M-I, at buildingbridgesonline.org.